Good evening. It's about 6 p.m. here in Washington, D.C. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And the name of the show is News Views on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C. Lots of interesting things to talk about tonight. First of all, before this goes any further, Mark and I want to thank our listeners for supporting us over the last several weeks while we were on Fun Drive. Apparently, the show must be doing pretty well.
We've had a very successful Fun Drive and a lot of support. We really want to thank our listeners out there. We know you listen every Friday. We also like to see that you're contributing to the station. Thank you so much.
And it certainly sends the message that News Views is enjoyed and appreciated by our listeners. So thank you there. But we're out of Fun Drive. We're not asking for any donations today. We're talking about Ferguson. An interesting article. And if I had to name the show, this is what I would name the show. There's an article called Ferguson's True Criminals. And what the Department of Justice report that we recently has come from Eric Holder regarding what they found in looking through the fountain of evidence, the mountain of evidence that the Ferguson Police Department and neighboring police departments, and not just the police department, but the criminal justice system, the municipal,
the judges are as bad as the cops,
the mayor.
And on.
The mayor was involved in ticket fixing. So the long and short of it is we have plenty to talk about. We're going to open the number at some point, but I'm going to start. Mark, I know you read. Before I start ranting, I'm going to let Mark throw in his 2 cents worth. And as I said, about 20 after or so, we're going to open up the phone lines and certainly get some response. Mark, what are your thoughts on the Ferguson?
I got a lot of ranting myself. First of all, before we go into the depths of the Ferguson report, we need to make clear that Ferguson is actually a relatively small municipality in St. Louis County.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, the stuff that goes on in Ferguson goes on throughout St. Louis County.
Yep.
So we shouldn't pretend, as we're going to get to some really, really ugly stuff that the people in Ferguson, the police, the judges, the mayor have done, and we're going to, trust me, it's pretty scathing. But I want to be very clear, don't think this is a Ferguson-only problem. Don't say, oh, well, the people in Ferguson are uniquely racist and uniquely awful.
Right.
Actually, we know for a fact that virtually every community in St. Louis County is like that. And I dare say, obviously, it's not unique to St. Louis or Missouri. I mean, this kind of stuff goes on around the nation. There are better police than others. I actually think we do pretty well in D.C., or much better in D.C., certainly than they did in Ferguson.
LAPD, couldn't do a lot worse,
well,
could you?
Well, LAPD famously was, you know, awfully racist and beating up people. Mm-hmm. You know about Rodney King. They've turned a corner. Ferguson seems like it's living 150 years ago. So let's get into it here. I'm just going to start. By the way, the best single summary I've seen was right there in the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. There's an article called The 12 Key Highlights from the DOJ Scathing Ferguson Report.
Right.
So if you don't have time to read the whole report, I suggest you go there. What do we have? We have I'm going to get all this time to talk about this. So, number one, Ferguson was trying to raise revenue. A lot of this was revenue. It wasn't that, you know, they just lay aside their Klan robes and tried to beat up black people, although some of them did. But mostly they were getting money off the poorest, weakest members of society. I remember one case they talked about where a woman had a $150 parking ticket, 2 parking tickets. And, you know, we've all had parking tickets. I certainly have had them in D.C. She was homeless. She couldn't afford to pay them. Over the course of 7 years, she ended up paying $550 for that $150 parking ticket after being in jail for 6 days.
Right.
And at the end of her 7-year $550 payment, almost 4 times the cost of the 2 tickets, guess what, Garland? She still owes $540.
Right.
The report points out that blacks were the only ones arrested in Ferguson for resisting arrest.
Mm-hmm.
Far more blacks than whites were stopped. Far more blacks than whites were arrested. Far more blacks than whites armed force was used. It goes on to say just example after example of just clearly racist stuff of police getting people for driving while black. I'll just give you an example. This is actually not even a guy driving. This is a bus patron. And a lieutenant, a supervisory police officer, sees a black guy waiting for a bus, kind of think of hard to think
which
of
which is against
more,
the law if you're black and in Ferguson.
Apparently, because the lieutenant drives up and he says, "Get over here." The bus patron says, "Me." The police officer says, "Get the F over here." "Yeah, you." The guy says, "Why? What did I do?" Police officer, "Give me your ID." "Why?" "Stop being a smartass and give me your ID." In which case, the guy gave him his ID. The police officer ran the man's names for warrants. Couldn't find any. The guy hadn't done anything wrong. He returned the ID and said, quote, "Get the hell out of my face," unquote. Now, this is a guy. There's no crime. There's no call.
It was an unconstitutional stop.
There's no nothing. He basically, there's another case, actually, it's much worse, where a guy was stopped and they asked to look at his car. And the guy said, "You don't have a constitutional right to look at my car," which he's absolutely right. By the way, you can't, unless a police officer has a warrant, yes, they can look. If they don't, you don't have to consent to a search. The guy then charged him. Listen to this, because he'd been playing basketball in a public park, 32-year-old young black, well, I won't say too young, you know, black man, somewhat young black man. They said that in that public park was children, so he accused the guy of pedophilia and took him in, and because the guy wouldn't consent to a search, and he was charged, he was arrested. And the guy actually lost a federal job. There's just example after example of this kind of stuff. A 14-year-old little boy, 5'5", 140 pounds, who was curled up in a ball, hiding from the cops. They sucked.
Which was
dogs
a smart move,
him.
I might add. I think that's what I'd do if I was in Ferguson.
A dog on him that bit him. And I'll just give you one more. This is an officer that was called to a house on a complaint. He went into an apartment. He pulled a guy out. Told the officer, quote, "You don't have a reason to lock me up," unquote. According to the guy, the officer responded, quote, "N-word, I can find something to lock you up on." The man responded, "Good luck with that." The officer then slammed his face into the wall, and after the man fell to the floor, the officer said, quote, "Don't pass out, mother effer, because I'm not carrying you to my car." It just goes on and on and on, example after example. And then the upshot of it all is that they're making money off of this thing. And you, I know you wanted to talk about the ticket fixing, Garland.
Well, a couple of things here. Number one, I do have some numbers. 88% of the use of force incidents in Ferguson, black people. 92% of warrants, black people. 96% of the people jailed for more than 2 days, black people. 100% of the times when the dogs use, when the police use dogs to bite someone, the person was black.
By the way, 100% of the time, every time a person was arrested for resisting arrest,
it was black.
They were black.
Yeah. The other thing is this. So one of the, interestingly enough, and here's the irony, one of the arguments that the Ferguson used about when the Department of Justice said, why is it that only black people get arrested? There was like 90 some percent of the times when people were stopped for walking in the roadway, which is what Michael Brown was stopped for.
Right.
92% of the times they were white. Basically, they didn't stop white people for doing that. They stopped black people. Okay. When they ask the, Ferguson, people, powers that be, to explain these numbers. Here's what they said. Ferguson government blamed a lack of personal responsibility as the reason why blacks experience more obstacles with Ferguson's police and court system than whites. So that's what they said. Well, why is all this only happening to black people? Lack of personal responsibility, which is interesting because the judge, his name is Ron Brockmeyer, municipal court judge. Well, he blew through a red light in Hazelwood, nearby city. He didn't have to go to court to fight a ticket. Under the subject line, City of Hazelwood versus Ronald Brockmeyer, he sent an email to the prosecutor, who also happens to be the prosecutor in Hazelwood, and said, pursuant to our conversation, attached, please find the red light camera ticket received by the undersigned. I would appreciate if you would see to this that the ticket is dismissed, and it was.
The judge got his own ticket dismissed.
Yes. The civil rights investigation has uncovered favors being called in by some of the city and the court's top officials, from the judge to the mayor to the clerk. According to the department report, a search of emails revealed at least 12 tickets that were fixed based on exchanges between Ferguson's courts clerk and a Hazelwood clerk.
There's a lot more than that, though.
In addition to making his own ticket disappear, Brockmeyer also, in August 2014, took care of a failure to appear notice and speeding ticket. Now, I was a police officer, I can tell you, a failure to appear notice is a warrant. It means you had a ticket, and let's say you get a speeding ticket, and you're supposed to go to jail on August 14th, and
you're
supposed to be there. If you don't show, they issue an FTA, fail to appear. It's a warrant for your arrest.
That's right.
For not showing up for court.
That's
so,
right.
There was a FTA warrant and a speeding ticket issued to a patrol to a patrol officer in Breckenridge Hills.
There have been cases in this report.
They took care of it.
Where somebody comes before a judge.
Listen to this. The mayor, in August 2013, Mayor James Knowles asked Carr for a parking ticket to be dismissed for someone he knew through volunteer work. Mm-hmm. Knowles acknowledged that the person shouldn't have left his car attendant there, but it was an honest mistake. And here's what the mayor said about his friend. I would hate for him to have to pay for this. So, and I could go on and on, but I'm not going to read the article. Here's my point for this particular segment of it. They said the reason that black people are suffering, they're getting all of these tickets, they're getting locked up, they're getting arrested, they're not paying out their tickets, they're getting warrants. The reason all of this is happening is because of lack of personal responsibility. Meanwhile, all of their white friends and buddies and each other, when they get a parking ticket, they fix it. When they get a speeding ticket or a warrant, they fix it.
Tell that to the homeless woman who paid a $150 parking ticket, paid $550, and still owes $540 after going to jail for 6 days in a country that supposedly doesn't have debtors' prisons. There are examples in this report where the police charge someone with something, the guy gets taken in, and the judge charged them with more.
Right.
And then the upshot of all of this is the part you told me before the break that I'll give you the honor of telling about Judge Brockmeyer. It's not just fixing tickets. He's got some personal responsibilities that he's not heeding.
Quite interestingly, he's fixing tickets. He's throwing black people in prison for the money to pay a fine. Yeah, for being black on a sunny day, as a comedian once said.
A bus stop.
But that's it. Being black at a bus stop on a sunny day or a rainy day, or maybe it wasn't even sunny already. Yeah.
Right.
And Judge Brockmeyer owes $172,646 in back taxes. You see, the problem with the black people in Ferguson is a lack of personal responsibility.
They don't have enough money to cheat the government.
As much
as Judge Brockmeyer does.
Yeah.
So Brockmeyer he cheats the government out of all the black population put together.
And let me throw something else in there, Mark. Think about this, too. So we have, and add this in there. So we've got, many times you can always link race and class. We got this Republican running the town. And what do we always say about the Republicans? They always cut taxes for the rich. They cut taxes for businesses. Somebody's got to pay that, don't they? They don't have money to run their, there's an instance where a court clerk went to the police chief and said, we need more money. Why? These Republicans cut all the taxes for the rich people. They cut all taxes cut the taxes for the businesses, and who has to pay it? They go to the poor people. In this instance, it's poor black people. That's the easy one. But in a lot of instances, it's just poor people. But they go to the poor people and they say, rich folks ain't got to pay taxes, but the poor people in Ferguson are the ones who are going to foot the bill.
Let me quote from the report. This is a direct quote. Ferguson's law enforcement practices are shaped by the city's focus on revenue rather than by public safety needs. This emphasis on revenue has compromised the institutional character of Ferguson's police department, contributing to a pattern of unconstitutional policing, and has also shaped its municipal court, leading to procedures that raise due process concerns and inflict unnecessary harm on members of the Ferguson community. It goes on to talk about the racial bias and so forth. Here's the heart of it. They're making money. You know, in some third world countries, we mock them because the police in those countries stop you
and
you pay them a bribe,
yep.
And you pay them a bribe, and you go on your way. And there's a number
of
corrupt countries like
where
that.
Where you carry money in your pocket
case,
for the police.
In this case, the police say, all right, pay your bribe to the city clerk, and they'll make sure that we get it. Because their police department is funded precisely from this unlawful and constitutional policing.
Yeah, we'll be right back. You're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon's here with Mark Levine, and my main man, Bill Witherspoon, is making it all happen. At 6:20, we're going to give out the number so you can call in and be a part of this.
At WPFW, we are because you are. Our goal is to be the voice of jazz and justice in our bustling and vibrant region. Thanks to the 2,400 members who participated during our winter membership campaign for making this possible. With your generous support, WPFW will continue to be the home of innovative radio that informs and inspires, whether it be through our diverse music programs or news and public affairs programming that is relevant to the critical issues of the day. If you did not get the opportunity to pledge during our campaign, there's still time. Visit us online at WPFW.org to donate now. Limited thank you gifts are available. Thank you so much for strengthening the bond we have with you and for keeping 89.3 FM strong.
89.3 FM WPFW. We're back. Let me give you a couple charges of instances. There was an incident where a man was detained. The other thing they found was that of the people who were charged, who received more than four citations and more than four charges, almost close to 100% of them were black. But here's an instance. Here's an example. Mark, now tell me, you're an attorney.
Okay.
I'm a formal high ranking law enforcement officer. I know a good charge and a bad charge when I saw one. This man was charged. He received four charges. One of them was making a false declaration because he said his name was Mike.
That's what I was.
But on his driver's license, it said Michael.
What a liar! What a
police officer charged the man. What's your name, Mike? Oh, well, right here
it says Michael.
Michael. Well, that's clearly your.
That's a charge.
That's it.
That's a criminal charge.
And here's another charge. Same thing. He gave them an address, which was where he lived, but it wasn't the address on his driver's license.
That's
because
right.
He hadn't changed his driver's license yet. Again, making a false declaration. So what we see here is a joke.
The same guy.
Same guy.
Yeah, by the way, this is the same guy who refused to allow the officer to search his car. This guy was the one resting in his car after a basketball game, the one that was accused of being a pedophile because there were children in the park. Mm-hmm. Here's my favorite one. While he was in his car relaxing after his basketball game, he was arrested for not wearing a seatbelt.
Yeah.
In his parked car that was turned off.
You got to admit, he wasn't wearing a seatbelt.
He wasn't wearing a seatbelt in his non-moving car with no engine.
Right now, if you were in Ferguson, they could walk in here and arrest all three of us.
None of us have a seatbelt.
We're
all sitting in this radio studio without a seatbelt.
Now, the fact of the matter is the law didn't require at that time that he have a seatbelt, but let's not be picky about it.
No, and the sad part, and then he was arrested at gunpoint.
Yeah.
He was charged with 8 violations of the Ferguson Municipal Code.
He was
pat down, of course, looking for weapons. And then the sad thing is that this man lost his job as a contractor with the federal government.
Right. Here's another
instance.
These things
have real consequences.
In one case, an officer detained a black resident, refused to articulate any criminal suspicion, and used a stun gun on him for 20 continuous seconds when he wouldn't submit to a frisk. So you stop somebody with no reasonable suspicion, no constitutional reason to stop him, and then say, I want to frisk you. And the guy says, well, no, I have constitutional rights. So you stun him. Now, here's the thing about this, Mark. What we're talking about is very, very clear. And this is very, very clearly Jim Crow. And let me tell you why. The hallmark of Jim Crow was that it was pervasive throughout the entire governmental structure. The police were the ones who bopped the black guy in the head for sitting at the lunch counter.
The police murdered Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman.
Right, that's it.
They led them right to the Klan.
Even to a lesser degree.
They literally stopped the car. And then sent them to the Klan when they were murdered.
So even to a lesser degree, the county or city council came up with a Jim Crow law that said black people couldn't eat in the, sit at the lunch counter. The police grabbed them, beat them up and arrested them. And they went to the judge and then the judge found them guilty and gave them a week for sitting. So throughout the Jim Crow system, it took the whole thing in order for it to work. One part wouldn't work.
And it took the federal
in
government
Ferguson,
to stop them.
Right. And in Ferguson, what do we see? We see the mayor.
The judges, the police.
This is clearly Jim Crow. So this is not an instance of Jim Crow. This is not. This is
it's
not
pervasive.
The disease.
This is not the disease.
I'll tell you what this is.
Yeah.
This is a symptom of the disease.
Right.
Here's what this tells me: that in Missouri, and I would argue throughout the South, Jim Crow has not gone anywhere for a lot of people who are living up here in a little bit of a different world, and who thinks that Jim Crow's gone.
You know, they made a big deal out of Officer Darren Wilson and Michael Brown, and some witnesses said he had his hands up, and other witnesses said he didn't have his hands up, and it became a whole he said thing, with liberals saying, I believe Michael Brown, conservatives saying I believe Darren Wilson, and none of us were there. Honestly, none of us know what happened because there's no video. It's not like Eric Garner, where the guy was clearly killed by police. But this is a systematic problem. This is far larger than Michael Brown's death, as tragic as it was. This is a systematic problem. Darren Wilson was a cog in a wheel. What he was doing apparently was typical. It wasn't unusual at all. It took this report, frankly, to find it out.
Let me throw another thing out there, too, and that is Darren Wilson came from another local police department that was disbanded.
And similar.
Yeah, that was disbanded. They had so many racial issues, they were disbanded. He left that department and got hired by Ferguson, number one. And last but not least, and then I'll give the number out. Based on my background and my experience, when I looked at Darren Wilson's testimony, you know, his argument, I said, it makes no sense to me. There's so many holes in it. I said, there's no possible way that I believe that that's true. Let me say this, and I'll give the number out. In light of the evidence in this investigation, where we find out that routinely police officers stop black people, beat them up, illegally arrest them, abuse them, tase them for nothing, mistreat them, call them names, how can you possibly not, you know, it's like anything else. You look at evidence, but you don't, once you look at it in the light of something else, how can someone possibly look at what was going on every day in Ferguson and not revisit Darren Wilson's story and say to themselves, you know what? I cannot believe that Darren Wilson had one story. The guy who was walking with Michael Brown had a completely different story. In light of this investigation, I'll say what I said before. I believe the guy that was walking with Michael Brown. I do not believe for one second. In fact, it reinforces what he said, because this story says, this clearly shows that they continually harass black people for walking in the street. And the guy said, he said to us, why the F are you in the street? He backed up. He reached out of the car. Yeah. He grabbed Michael. He pulled on him.
Fits the pattern.
None of that makes sense. And then, and I'll end it by saying this, and then Darren Wilson told us that a 6'4", 290-pound man punched him as hard as he could in the face twice, and he didn't even really have a blemish on his face. And I will argue this. That's facial reconstruction surgery. If somebody that big punches you in the face, you will never, and I was a police officer 27 years, and I saw people who got punched in the face by a lot smaller guys than that. If somebody 6'4", 290 punches you in the face, you're not getting up from that. You're not chasing anybody. The next thing you're going to hear is the beep of an emergency room doctor and a bunch of people yelling stat and helicopter blades as they fly you out.
Well, one more thing, because I want to...
Let me get out the number, too.
Okay, give out the number.
202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. We're talking Ferguson. I kind of have a funny feeling that Bill Witherspoon's about to get real busy.
I think so, too. One more thing I want to throw out there for you folks to comment on.
Did I give it right? 0893? Yeah. Okay, 202-588-0893.
0893, 89.3 FM. So when I was in law school, we had a program. It was in New Haven, Connecticut, and Yale had a program.
What was that? Joe's School of Law, Mark?
Yale Law School.
Okay. Right.
And they had a program in New Haven, Connecticut. We would go into inner city schools. And New Haven is a it's a town that's it's probably a majority African American town. People there are very poor. Mm-hmm. We went into the schools to teach people their rights under the law. And I went to these schools and taught kids that come from, you know, very poor backgrounds, mm-hmm, what to do if a police officer stops you. And I remember we even did some role playing, and, mm-hmm, and a kid played the cop, another kid played the kid, and the cop immediately started, the kid playing the cop started beating up the kid playing the cop.
Yeah, right.
No. He's like, well, that's what happens in my neighborhood.
Right.
And here's what I said. I said, no, if a cop stops you, here's what you do. You get their badge number. You go and you look on their chest. You get their badge number. You don't tell the cop no, because he's got a gun. He's got a right to use it. You don't want to be fighting him later. You're going to be dying. Take that badge number, take a mental note of it, and when it's all over, you call and you report that police officer. Report to the state of Connecticut, report to the local authorities, you report that police officer. And that's the way out. That's how you stop a renegade police officer. What you were telling me, Garland, before we got on air, is that in Ferguson, they weren't wearing their badges.
Right.
You can't point out the bad cops and they don't have a badge with the badge number on it.
Weren't wearing name tags, or they were putting a piece of black tape over their name tags, and they got three different letters from the Department of Justice that said you're not wearing their name tags, and they still wouldn't wear them. Or now, how malicious is that?
That's
when
how
a person puts
protected.
When a person puts black tape over their name tag.
As far as I'm concerned, if a police officer puts black tape tape over their name tag. They're no longer acting as a police officer. They're acting as an ordinary citizen, and if they're doing something to you, you call 911 and say, you know, this guy who's pretending to be a police officer is attacking me.
Well, you know what that's like, actually? You know what that's like?
But they're not acting under color
of
law anymore.
You know what it's like, Mark? It's not even like, it's like a criminal. That's like a person pulling a ski mask
that's
over
right.
their head.
Same thing.
You know what I mean?
Same thing. They're not a cop anymore.
You're deliberately disguising
who
you are.
As soon as you cover your name tag, you are no longer a police officer, and it seems to me that anything you do is outside the color of law and you should go to jail for it.
You know, here's a police department that arrested a guy, brought him in, and he was, they told him they had a warrant, although the person that they had a warrant for had a different middle name. So they can't even make a good faith argument that they thought it was the right person. This guy's now suing him. They bring the guy in. Well, what do you know? Somebody comes in, opens the cell, and beats the guy. Well, here's what they did. They charged him with destruction of property, of their property.
The police officer?
Yeah. They charged the guy that
The guy that got beaten up.
Yeah. You know what they charged him? What it put in writing?
He got blood on the uniform.
He bled on their uniforms.
How dare he?
Yeah. They
how
beat
dare,
him up and charged him with destruction.
How dare somebody being hit by cops bleed on their uniform?
It's inexcusable.
It's inexcusible.
That's why I said.
We got to keep those uniforms
this
clean.
This is pure Jim Crow. Huh. But meanwhile, the good thing is the Supreme Court have told us that we're in a post-racial society and we don't need the Voting Rights Act or anything anymore.
No, we don't need to vote anymore.
Clearly, they don't need it in Missouri.
We got a lot of callers. Let's get right to it.
Yeah, let's go. We got plenty of callers. Tesfa.
Good evening, my friend.
Good evening,
Tesfa. Good evening.
Look, in fascism or in the Nazi system, three things are deeply held and deeply believed in, and it was actually written by someone with a doctorate degree in some social science. That is, those things are: repeat a lie many times,
We're only going to give you a minute. I'm going to ask you to kind of close up over the next 30 seconds because we got a lot of lines blinking, Tesfa. So
okay.
If you could kind of wrap it up.
Okay. The lie becomes true. And to black people in Ferguson, the lie that they are irresponsible became true because it was repeated so many times.
Thank you very much, Tesfa.
Let me just tell you.
Oh, well, actually, we got a lot of lines. I certainly appreciate your call. Who's next? Halo. Halo.
Hi, Halo.
You're on the
comment?
Air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say first I have a comment and then a question. One of the last things that Marion Barry did, they're having a conference called at Marshall Heights Community Development Organization to deal with the reentry of a lot of the blacks who've been victimized from this racist system. And that's tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Marshall Heights Community Development Organization. But my question is, we have a black president, we have a Department of Justice, we have investigations, and even this report, which is blatant civil rights violations, but yet nothing. In Florida, nothing. Oklahoma, nothing. After all of this, obvious, where you, even in your own experience as a police officer, can tell blatantly that it's a problem, but yet nothing's happening. So my question is, what is it to do? I'll read to be like Farrakhan, who said to all the blacks in the military, get out of the military because our own government will not defend us as a people, so get out the government and defend us here in this country, or are we to petition the government with a black president who seems to be blind of this issue of our people dying by the masses and 85% of blacks in prison are more than we had in slavery in 1850. So please help me with this.
I don't think President Obama's blind to this issue. I think that when you talk about the government, obviously there's many kinds of government. There's the federal government. You know, there's President Obama. There's Attorney General Eric Holder, who personally put his stamp on this report. And I think it's a scathing report. And I guarantee you the Justice Department, I can't guarantee you because I don't know the Justice Department, but I'm shocked if the Justice Department let this go.
Well, you know what they've already
issued
said.
A report.
What they said was this. They said to Ferguson, either make some reforms, submit them to us for approval, or we're going to launch a civil rights suit against you. And you know good and well, sir,
that they'll do it. Yeah. There's been more, I know there's been more civil rights investigations under Attorney General Eric Holder. I believe
there was the recent one than ever before.
I do think that, I mean, you could argue that President Obama needs to do more, but I don't think it's fair to lump Obama in with the Ferguson officials. And right. I mean, there's all levels of government, and there's frankly, we only know about this because of Eric Holder.
Right.
I hope that, frankly, they don't stop with Ferguson, because Ferguson's a relatively small community, and it sounds to me from everything I hear that virtually every community in St. Louis County is like this.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to stop just with Ferguson, but, you know, you could argue that Obama needs to do more. The question is, what more could he do?
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, and that is, it says in the report that, you know, there is an inference that it's not in the report. This is not just Ferguson, which certainly is a message to the rest of these.
Shape up, or you're going to get in trouble too.
Number one. Number two, Holder just finished a recent similar investigation in Cleveland.
That's true.
And found the same thing.
That's true.
So we're starting to see a pattern. What he's able to do in doing this is, you're starting to see a pattern that he does an investigation on a major police department and he finds the same thing. I am glad that Holder is in there, and I'm glad that he's doing that. And you can always, no matter what anybody does, you can always say somebody's not doing enough.
But you know what? Also, we should note that there have been changes, all right? Look at the difference just since Bill de Blasio. And he's getting a lot of pushback from the New York City Police Department.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
But already the people elected a new mayor with a new policing policy, and it's his intent to change it. As I said, the Los Angeles Police Department is better than it used to be. The Washington, D.C. Police Department is better than it used to be. And these are, you know, three of America's four largest cities. So, again, we have to point out the horrors going on in Ferguson and communities all around the station in Cleveland, but let's not pretend that it's impossible to fix or it's never been fixed, because there are some good stories
and also,
as well as some
bad
ones.
The other thing, let's not pretend, as I said, I came from law enforcement. Let's not pretend. I mean, you're talking about something that's been going on for hundreds of years.
Sure.
Let's not pretend that President Obama or Eric Holder can wave a magic wand and say, hey, guys, shape up. As I said, what we're looking at in Ferguson is indicative of, you know, another interesting article that I read where they said they talked to some of the white residents of Ferguson. They were like, what? What are you talking about? What problem?
Yeah, they hadn't been stopped.
Right. That is an indication. What they were really saying is, we don't have a problem.
That's right.
This is the way things are done here. This is the way they've always been done. This is the Jim Crow way of life that we have. The only problem we have now is that the black people won't accept it anymore. And one of the things that happened was this. They were beating them. They were mistreating them. Unfortunately, to some extent, the black people were probably numb to this mistreatment. When it got to the point that they shot an unarmed man and left his body laying in the street and all of that, I think it kind of pushed the black people in the community where they felt like, well, you know what? We know you'll beat
you
us
know,
up. What do we have left to lose?
You know what? You can say the same about Jim Crow laws. I don't remember because I wasn't around then, but I've learned from history that when Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and Bayard Rustin and all of them wanted to try to vote in the South, a lot of the older blacks said, you're crazy. You're going to get beaten. Mm-hmm. You're going to get, you know, you can't do this. And King and others said, well, you know, it's our constitutional rights. We know it's our constitutional right. Do you want to get killed? And many of them felt like the civil rights movement couldn't succeed and told them just to lay low.
And the fact is,
there was a lot of violence.
What?
And it was dangerous. And I understand where those people were coming from.
I had an older black lady say to me that when she was growing up in North Carolina, that they had a cross burn in their yard.
Yeah.
And that her father was outspoken. Her mother said to her father, you better keep your mouth shut and stop making
killed.
So much noise.
And you know what? You can understand. That's not an irrational response.
She was a woman with five kids.
That's not an irrational response.
And she told her,
So that's understandable. But then when you get the media spotlight on it, now Ferguson has a chance to cry out
right.
to
and the
rest
of us.
The fact
of the matter is this, and this is what I always say, the people of Ferguson were not American citizens. Because American citizens have constitutional rights. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is this, they did not have constitutional rights.
Clearly.
They didn't have them.
Clearly.
And this is Jim Crow, and what we can say is this. We can't hearken back to the days of Jim Crow, because there are places in America where these are the days of Jim Crow.
That's true.
Shaka. Chris. Oh, Chris.
Welcome, Chris.
You're on the air, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, you guys hit a lot of my points on the head. I was just going to say, you know, this is not a revelation, this report. This has been going on for hundreds of years, and this is nothing new. People have been in particular, people of African-American ancestry have been talking about this, but no one's been listening. I feel like you just said, the reason why people didn't listen is because, as Malcolm X said, if you're treated as half a citizen, then you're not a citizen at all. Really, the country is displaying to us as a ethnic group that we weren't about value. So I'm not, you know, overly surprised personally by the report.
Really. Me neither. I feel affirmed by it.
It's every police force, and that was the nature of the police. The police were.
Well, I'm not going to say it's every police force. Clearly, it's in way too many police forces. It's in way too many places, and it's clearly out there. But some have improved, and I sometimes think if you say it's everyone, then you make it seem like it's hopeless. And you don't see that, you know, you can elect a new mayor.
Let me ask you this. Our caller, is it Chris, right?
Yeah.
To some extent, in the black community, Mark made a good point. Doesn't it feel, in a way, almost hopeless in the United States for a black person?
I would say yes, especially given the history. When you're this weekend we're going to be celebrating the march on, Salem.
Yeah.
Selma. And, you know, when you do that, and you're telling people the truth, they don't listen to you for 50 years, 100 years, 150 years, what are you supposed to do at that point? I keep telling you, you're killing me. I keep telling you that.
Here's my problem. I understand where the hopelessness comes from. I don't blame anyone for feeling hopeless. But I think hopelessness breeds despair. Despair breeds inaction. And inaction allows it to continue. And that's exactly, to me, the argument between King and the older blacks of that time was hopelessness leads to giving up. And so I really hope people don't feel hopeless, or at least we can try to fight that hopelessness feeling, because you can make changes, and sometimes it's harder to do than others. But hopelessness, to me, is not a solution. It's a retreat.
Right. Who's next? AG, you're on the air.
Hey.
You're on the air, AG.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys. I'm listening to your broadcast and everything. And I'm a truck driver, so I've been all over this country numerous times, and I've seen how it is in different states and everything. And it's like the question I ask myself is, as a black man at that, you know, we break our necks, we put this work in, pay our taxes, go with the flow of things, the made through slavery, all this other stuff going on. We at war with other countries, and we still got to deal with racism. We still got to deal with all of this trash going on. For what reason? For nothing. What does it amount to? What do I have to do to be accepted? Because our blood, sweat, and tears are inside this country. We helped build this country. It's 2015. Why are we still going over the same issues? And then to have a black president, or quote-unquote black president, and all of these issues are still going on. Nobody is really standing up with their torch like how we had in the 60s and stuff.
Well, let me make a point about that, because I hear this from a lot of people, and I have a thought on that, because people say we have a black president. I think we are imposing an unfair, very, very unreasonable, and it's bad enough that
racism was not going to end when President Obama has
everything he does. If he breathes, he breathes wrong. If he doesn't breathe, he should have breathed a different way. But then it's what's other unfair, in my opinion, on black people is we expect him to be Moses and part the Red Sea. We expect 1619 was the first slave. These things that are absolutely indoctrinated into the very DNA of our society, and we say,
disappear.
Why is all this going on? And we, for God's sake, he's been here for 7 years.
You know,
he's not going to fix these things. And I think to some extent, we put an unfairness on him. And I feel like saying to the president, look, man, first of all, they're trying to beat you down. So I almost want to say to the president, I'm sorry. I understand that you can't wave a magic wand and fix this. If there was a white president, he wouldn't be attacked like this by black people for not fixing it. And it's unreasonable expectations, in my opinion.
You know, it's ironic. You find people on the far left and people on the far right agreeing that because we have a black president, racism's over. You know, your people on Fox News saying, we don't need anything more to help black people. We have a black president, all right? Affirmative action's gone. We don't need anything to help blacks anymore. And then you have somebody on the left saying, well, you know, Obama's black, and therefore he needs to help black people.
Why hasn't he fixed these
things? Why hasn't he fixed everything? And the answer is there's only only so much one man, even the President of the United States, can do. Now, if you want specific criticisms about Obama, fair enough. Let's hear them.
No.
And we might agree with you on them. But this idea that somehow it was going to magically, you know, end.
First of all,
I mean, I think he's doing his job with Ferguson. I mean, this is a great report.
And, you know, here's
to expose
the thing.
This stuff.
Anyone who hasn't done with the dealt with the legal system, it first of all, doesn't understand the glacier, you know, the legal system moves at a glacier-like pace.
Yeah.
So even dealing, you know, I was a person, I filed a lawsuit against the police department that I worked for back in 1993. And it was so bad that the attorney general in Maryland basically said, you know, we ain't going to defend this. Let's work out a deal. But the bottom line was this. It's even a suit that was so overwhelming they weren't even going to defend it still took 2 years to resolve.
Oh, sure. That's
and then
quick.
It still took
That's
another
quick.
2 years to kind of institute the things in the consent decree.
That's
so
quick.
People don't realize, and let me throw this out, when you talk about police departments, court systems, municipal systems, these are institutions
it's a good
are
old boy network, and everybody knows everybody, and they all help each other, and you'd have to basically replace the entire police force and the entire municipal judges.
And here's the other thing about the South. The last time they had to send troops down there.
That's true.
They had to literally send troops to the South at gunpoint to force them to allow black people even to walk through the dual of school, little children to walk through the school of the door or to walk through a college. So is there resistance? That would be the understatement of the year. So can President Obama fix this? Not in his lifetime.
Well,
but I would
he
have.
He can play a major role, and I think he is doing that.
And I applaud the president, and I applaud the attorney general, because they're doing something in a time when nothing has been done here's what I believe. If you didn't have a black president and a black attorney general right now, in my opinion, you can't say for sure, but this is my thoughts, you wouldn't have it exposed at this level. Maybe I'm wrong. People don't know about Eric Holder's wife's history in the civil rights movement. Wasn't she one of the first people that walked in, what was it? Was it Little Rock or whichever college it was? She was one of the first people that went in. I'll look that up. But meanwhile, Mark, I think Shaka's on the Shaka. Shaka, welcome WPFW.
Hi, Shaka.
And make sure you turn your radio down,
or
there's all these echoes, and we won't be able to get anything.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Talk to us.
All right. By the way, Eric Holder's wife was one of the kids of the Central High School in Little Rock.
Oh, Central High School.
That's it. That's
okay.
It. Thank you very much. We have such smart.
We do.
We have such smart callers. I appreciate that. Far smarter than Mark and I.
That's for sure. Go ahead, Shaka.
Oh, well, here's my thing. I want to go beyond Ferguson. I want to go, you know, look at what's going on in Florida with the Trayvon Martin situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look what's going on in Cleveland.
Staten Island.
I'm blaming the 12-year-old Tamir Rice for his own death.
What was the woman's name down there that got all of those years for when she just shot a warning shot? Marissa Alexander, there you go.
He's good.
Right.
He's good. It was Marissa Alexander. Yeah.
Right. So my thing is this, you know, we hear this president and past presidents and other lawmakers will remind us that this is a country of laws, right? And the law, but my problem is the law is written in such a way, let's take the Zimmerman case. The law is written in such a way that one juror says, we know he was guilty, but because the way the law is written and the way that it was presented to us, we had to acquit him.
Yeah, particularly in Florida, that's exactly the case.
Right.
Stand your ground.
And then now the Department of Justice says we can't bring anything against him because basically it's because of the way the law is written. Okay?
That's all true. Although, to be fair, they could still go after get Ferguson because Ferguson, like all places, is under the 14th Amendment to the Constitution, which gives everyone equal protection under the law.
Right.
So when you have an openly racist police force like they have in Ferguson, the Justice Department does have authority to come in there. In Florida, they've got more of a de facto racism than a legal racism, and they use these terrible laws to persecute black
and,
people.
And Eric Holder even said after the Darren Wilson thing, when he said, we're not going to move forward, and after some of these other instances, he said in parting, the problem is that the way the law is written, it's too hard to prosecute these cases.
Right. So
even after
right.
he said,
Chuck
I'm not going to do it, afterwards, he basically said, it needs to be changed because I need to be able to prosecute cases and where I feel that there's a problem, and right now, I can't do it. So go ahead. Jeff, welcome to WPFW. You're on the air.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good.
Yeah, that is a real, real fiery conversation. You guys got to pump y'all brakes. Let some listeners get through. So listen, you know, I've heard some comments from a lot of folks out there talking about the president doesn't love America, yeah, stuff like that. Well, I'll tell you like this. If I was president, I wouldn't love America either the way in which folks treat one another. What he's saying, I guess what, if there's any credibility in that statement that was made by...
Giuliani, and I don't think there is, but go ahead.
Yeah, you know, it would be the fact that Obama doesn't love America when it mistreats its people the way
no one should love what happened in Ferguson and what's happening in Ferguson. No one should love America when it's being racist and brutal and just so that's
and then you know, to have so many undeniable truths about what is going on in this country, you know, and then to have so many instances where a man of his stature, he is the president elect of this country, and he's mistreated in such a way, disrespected in such a way for the world to see, and then they want to try and justify their behavior. Come on, man, you know.
Well, you know, thanks a lot. And you know, even here in Ferguson, we found one of them was, I believe, a court clerk that's been dismissed, and they won't say who they are, but two police supervisors, two high-ranking police officers, who were sending around racist emails. They had pictures of the president as a monkey and all these other things going on. So even at that level, what's interesting here is this, and this is the thing about Jim Crow. They didn't exhibit a dislike for black people. They didn't. They exhibited a contempt in their very heart.
I think contempt is exactly the word. I think that's exactly the word. Look, I'm not usually one to defend a president, any president, being attacked. You have a right to attack the president. This is America. And frankly, attacking the president is American as apple pie. But to me, attacking his policies, and God knows we attacked George W. Bush's policies, is absolutely fair game. Go for it. Do it. Like I said, there's nothing more American than that. But it's this contempt you talk about, Garland, that's different. It's this idea that it's not worthy of discussion, not worthy of logic, not worthy of making your case against a policy. That, I think, It tells you who's Obama's.
Well, you know, and let me say this. You know, we'll take another call. I rail against the South and the Southern, let me change this. I rail against the Southern white culture. That's what I'm real against, the Southern white racist culture.
Although not all Southern whites,
I didn't
are
say
in
all were,
culture.
But I said
I
the culture.
I
said there's
there.
A culture
yes,
is there.
There,
and even right now we've got Roy Moore. Look what down in Alabama.
Oh yeah.
It's this
refusing
whole,
to obey the federal judges.
Yeah. It's this hierarchical thing, and it's a hierarchical thing that says there are people in there that they believe that should have less rights than other people.
Yeah.
And whether it's, you know.
Listen, that's as old as humanity. A hierarchy and the idea of, you know, the serfs and the slaves and the nobles and the whole thing. But, you know, America had this document that said all men are created equal, and the guy that wrote it was a slaveholder.
Yeah, right.
But the ideas behind it outlived slavery.
And we're dealing now with facing the myth, and the myth is that this is a country of laws when it's not. It's always been a country of, and I say this not in using particular gender identification. It's a country of men, not a country of laws. You know, it's a country of humans, not a country of laws.
But
it's never been a country of laws.
But we strive to be a country of laws,
right.
And we do improve. And you know, if anything, we're celebrating what happened 50 years ago in Selma is worse. Well, if it's worse. I was going to say, is it worse than Ferguson? Let's just say it was more widespread.
Maybe not.
Blacks couldn't vote. I mean, the point is, okay. Let's just say the arc of the moral universe is long, but events toward justice. I'll just stop there.
I got a better idea. Let's just take a caller. How about
fair enough.
Freedom. Now, this is my kind of caller.
That's a great
freedom.
A great name.
You know, Freedom, we've been looking for you for a long time around these parts. Welcome to WPFW.
Oh, thank you. I'll just wanted to just call and say...
Is that your real name, by the way? I love that name if it is.
Yeah, I hate when people even ask me that kind of a dumb question. But
I'm sorry. All right. I think it's a great name.
But,
go ahead.
But, yeah, So, you know, the problem is not Obama, nor is it Eric Holder or any government official. It, the problem is not them, and the solution is not them. So, I think when you mentioned earlier about black people being hopeless to a degree, I don't think it's so much hopelessness. I think sometimes black people just look at reality and say this stuff ain't going to change, even though there's pockets of us who continue to try to change things. The problem is white America. White America is to blame. Black people bear no responsibility for anything or any of the conditions that are forced upon us. I think sometimes when we talk and discuss these things, we forget that this is a system deliberately set up by white men, right? And I know we know this, but I'm saying in terms of conversation, you know, we try to say, well, you know, we like people going down to Selma to celebrate and commemorate. You know, there should be more of a, I don't know, go down to Selma to tear the place up to in terms of what we can do to bring about a revolutionary change. So I'm just telling you, from my point of view, we're going nowhere with these discussions. Things can increasingly get worse in this country, you know, even worse than conditions were under slavery in terms of black people being unsafe. Killed a black person into slavery, that was somebody's property. Today, there's not that, right? So you kill black people and there's very little response in the black community in terms of some real pushback. So we should begin to look at things in reality. If white folks set it up this way, they're not going to change it. There's not enough black people in this country with the revolutionary spirit to change it, but we'll keep fighting for freedom and for a revolution, even if we have to die in the process. I think that's where we are. I think people need to be real with themselves about that. Going to school, getting education, all that stuff, fine. At the end of the day, you're still a black person in America, and you can be killed at whim.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Certainly appreciate freedom. Interesting. Here's the thing I always say about that. There's a lot of things, you know, there. I don't have to go into that. I don't agree with violence and things of that nature. And I understand hopelessness. I don't agree with it. And if you say, well, black people didn't force this upon themselves, which is 100% true, but a lot of black people fought, and black people didn't throw in the towel and say, you know, Martin Luther King, a lot of other people in this country didn't just throw in the towel and say that's the way it is. They recognized that things weren't going to change unless they did something, and they did something to make a change.
I don't think you can see how to change the present unless you can see that we have changed the past. If you don't think that blacks are any better off now than they were under slavery, then you're right. You have no solution to today's problems because you don't think that things can be improved.
Well, and I'll throw this. If you think they weren't any better off now, then you don't understand how bad it was
under slavery. Well,
there you go.
That's exactly right.
I've read some books on slavery. I've studied slavery. Let me tell you what you need to do. Go online. There was a project that was under FDR where what they did was they went and they interviewed a bunch of former slaves that
fantastic.
Were very old.
In the 1930s.
Yeah. You can go online and you can listen to some of those and you can read some of those. The one that always reminds me is there was a very, very old man, and they said to him, you know, how was it under slavery? And he just said, oh, it was terrible. You were like a dog or a pig or a chicken or something. And they said, what would you do at 75 if they changed the law and they reinstituted slavery? He says, well, I reckon I'd just take a gun and put it to my head and end it all. So the reality is this. No, if you understand, if you think it's as bad as it was under slavery, here's what that tells me. You need to get some books and study up on slavery.
I understand where the anger,
'cause it was bad.
I understand where the anger is coming from. The Ferguson report is...
It's infuriating.
It's atrocious. It's scary. It's awful. There's not enough words to describe how awful that report is, and it makes you angry, and you want to compare it to something to show angry. But my problem with comparing it to slavery is I really think if you believe that no change can ever happen, if you believe that nothing
you're
can ever
trapped.
Improve for people's life, you're absolutely trapped. Why change anything now?
Ramey, welcome to PFW. And thank you for your generous contribution
you,
on behalf of the Gene Ramey Foundation. I certainly want to thank you for that,
We do appreciate
Eric.
That.
Thanks so much, Garland. How you guys doing?
Wonderful. What's happening?
Now, I'm going to take exception to something Mark said.
I'll
get to that in a second. But in the 2008 elections in Missouri, there was about, I don't know, 10 seats or so. The Democrats did extremely well. There was one congressional seat they won, but all the Democrats came through and prevailed except one. Except one. Barack Obama.
Right.
I mean, the governors, whoever, they were running by margins anywhere from 60% to 85%. I mean, which tells you something right there.
I've been to Missouri.
Okay, but the need to consent to
Go ahead and wrap it up because we're out of time.
Yeah, Scalia and the boys have changed that. They change every 10 minutes. They went to search a house. There were several people there, and one of them said, no, you can't come in. Scalia and them said, because the other one or two said you could, that they could go
in. Eric's right about that. You're absolutely right about that. In a case where several people were in the house, the Supreme Court is already taking away.
We don't want to go there. Gosh, when we start talking, when you start saying
it's a good point.
Scalia and Alito.
Thanks for bringing that up.
Mark, if someone wants to get in touch with you, what
can I go to my Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk, or you can follow me on Twitter at MarkLevineTalk, and let me know what you thought of today's show.
Oh, great. I'm on Facebook. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm at Garland Nixon on Twitter. I'll give you my email address. It's garlandn@gmail.com.
Oh, and my website, MarkLevineTalk.com. Yep. I'm pretty consistent.
There we go. GarlandN@gmail.com. If you want to continue, if you want to send me an email and make a comment or Facebook me, Garland Nixon, simply do that. Also, you know, we got a lot of people on the line. I'll be back next week. I think I'm going to open the phones back. We got a lot of people that want to talk. So I'll be back. I'm going to open the phones back next week and we can continue. And you can get your points in about Ferguson. I'll open them up early and we can go from there. WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington, D.C. The name of the show is News Views every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Next, Robin's Place with Robin Holden, Carol Tyson.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the just completed public affairs or news program. As a listener-sponsored community radio station, WPFW appreciates your feedback, whether favorable or otherwise. To provide your feedback, even if it is regarding one of our many music programs, simply email us at info@wpfw.org. That's info@wpfw.org. Thanks.
WPFW 89.3 FM, Washington.